RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Ramesh Thakur is a Brownstone Institute senior scholar, a former United Nations Assistant Secretary General, and Emeritus Professor in the Crawford School of Public Policy at the Australian National University. He's been a guest on this show before and a guest of RCR in person in Auckland back in April. And Ramesh is back with us to provide some commentary from his perspective on the results of the US election. Ramesh, it's great to have you back. I hope you're well.
I'm well, thank you. And it's wonderful to be back on this lovely day.
Thank you. Oh, lovely day. Is that in reference?
I'm talking about the weather.
Okay, but many would be saying around the world, it is a lovely day for that reason, not the weather, but the other reason.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. All right. So do you have a word to describe what's just happened here?
Very briefly, and we can elaborate on that. One, I think it marks a significant political realignment.
Yeah.
Trump's achievement is to have forged an entirely new coalition for him to win like this. Second, I think it's a comprehensive repudiation of the progressive agenda of critical race theory, identity politics, particularly gender identity, lawfare as a means of destroying your opponent, etc.
Yeah.
And,
those are very significant things, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And three, there are major implications for the rest of the world, including the democratic world. I think all those three things will be studied intensively in the next few weeks and months to come. And that has implications for us in Australia, in the UK, and in Europe. A lot of the, well, for understandable reasons, almost all the commentary has focused, for example, on anti-Trump statements by David Lammy, the foreign secretary in the UK, by Starmer himself, by Anthony Albanese and former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd in Australia, etc. There is a second aspect that I think we might want to come back to later on, and that is a person who's going to have a powerful influence on Trump in his second administration is Elon Musk. And all these countries have made anti-Musk statements and have picked fights.
Oh, yeah.
We shouldn't forget that.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of humble pie that's going to be going around.
So some very uncomfortable personalities. You've mentioned some names there right now. Would you think? It's a difficult position to be in, trying to walk back what you might have said or done, thinking that maybe this may never have happened.
No, especially with a president who bears a grudge.
Okay.
For example, one of the people from within the party who had attacked Trump very harshly was Nikki Haley, the former governor. And in the last couple of months, she made herself available to campaign for him. Because as she argued in an op-ed the last couple of days, just before the election, despite his failures, she said he was still the better choice for voters than the alternative. But in fact, Trump never picked up the phone to call her and ask for her help.
Mm.
So he does bear grudges. And he's not going to forget these people who made these nasty cracks at him. So I think our ambassador in Washington should be ready to pack his bags. And I think Mr. Prime Minister Starmer might consider an earlier reshuffle of his foreign secretary than perhaps he would want to.
Yeah.
And I think our government should consider replacing our e-safety commissioner, who picked a very public fight with Elon Musk and
lost. With Elon. Yeah. That's very interesting, the Elon component, isn't it? Because he's so across things. He's, it's the wealthiest guy in the world, sends rockets to the moon. Well, hopefully to the moon soon, then
and
to
the
Mars.
The elections, I gather, will increase his net wealth by around $15 billion more.
Yeah, so...
Just a statistic to you and me, but...
So do you think he swung people, this man, Elon? Do you think he was crucial to the success of the campaign? Could you hold him at that level?
Well, there's one other factor that's very, very important, especially for you at RCR, and that is long-term, I think the biggest loser of this election is the mainstream media.
Yeah.
They are totally discredited. People stop reading, and if they read, they stop believing what they were being told. They're being told absolute lies and being gaslit, and the media displayed utter contempt for them. And they're going to take their news from alternative and social media. X had a huge influence, and that's going to grow. Trump's, whatever it's called, social truth or whatever it's called, has grown up by another 1.5 billion. I think it's not just the media, by the way, but this reminds me of a year ago, our voice referendum in Australia. The fact that the ruling elites across the board, cultural, financial, corporate, all combined on one side, and the celebrities to lecture and hector and scold and sneer at the ordinary people, in the end, I think, produced a backlash. And, there was one rally that Trump was addressing, and Harris was addressing an alternative rally at the same time somewhere else that was full of celebrities. And Trump said, I don't need a star because I have policy. So I think the fact that celebrities are endorsing you is henceforth going to be a net negative in these influential countries. And Ricky Gervais, I think, put on quite a funny video recently where he mocked them for that. You know, I'm a celebrity. That means I know more than you about politics, about science, about any topic.
Yeah, that's right. So referring back to what you mentioned in those three points, was the middle one, surrounding issues, critical race theory, transgender, that sort of package, if I could put it that way, of issues. And then obviously you can attach probably the influence of celebrities into that, because that's a cultural thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so do you think that a Trump victory here, well, does it knock those issues out of the park now?
I think so.
Oh, you do?
Yep. Yes. One of his most effective ads was Kamala Harris supports them. I support you. I said he's the most striking thing for me as a professor of politics, if you like, is this forging a new coalition. If you go back to 4 years ago, 8 years ago, in 2016, there was a realignment where he brought together a winning white working class coalition. What's very striking about this one is how that has expanded to increase his support from minorities so much more.
Yeah.
Blacks, Hispanics, as he said in his victory speech last night, even Arab Americans were voting for him. Unions, non-unions, Asian Americans, just for obvious reasons, looking up the Indo-American community, which is only 4.7 million, and let's say half of them are voters of voting age. But with Hillary Clinton, 84% of Indian Americans had voted for the Democrats. With Biden, it was down to 68%. According to exit polls, this time is 60%. And that is reflected across the board with blacks, with Hispanics. In the most heavily concentrated Puerto Rican constituency county in the country, Trump got a majority of the votes from them after all the controversy about the Puerto Ricans.
So there's an element of class warfare going on.
A class realignment. Obviously. Class is much more important for political partisanship now than identity politics based on race and gender and other things. Kamala Harris did not get higher percentage of votes from women than Biden did. She didn't get higher percentage of votes from blacks than Biden did, nor from Hispanics.
But that's Trump, a curious one on it's curious on blacks too, because she's woman of color and all of that. You would have thought that those boxes would have instantaneously been ticked in her favor.
Well, that's what the Democrats think. That's what the Labour Party here thinks. That's what the Labour Party in the UK thinks. As a member of one of those communities, let me tell you in as unqualified and as unambiguous and emphatic a language as possible, I find that attitude utterly demeaning and contemptuous towards me.
I can understand that.
I will vote according to competence, integrity, ability, character. I will not vote simply because that other person happens to be of my religion or my race or my skin color. And the idea that we can all be taken for granted and that Biden should be able to say in the previous election that if you're not voting for me, you ain't black. That is just absolutely condescending. So this, and the problem for the Democrats, of course, was that Harris was herself a diversity pick. Biden made it clear he was going to look for a woman and preferably a black woman. She ticked those boxes. But, you know, even if you take something like abortion, where she was running on that in a big way, but according to the polls before the election, about a third of American women describe themselves as pro-choice.
Mm.
And even those who describe themselves, as pro-life, and even those who describe themselves as pro-choice, only a minority support abortion up to full term.
So why would you hammer it in the way,
because they talk to themselves and they reflect the bubble media. They convince themselves that what they're hearing from all these people is what the average American thinks. They're completely disconnected. And that's why the celebrity endorsements, they think is great. And the rest of the country thinks, get real. And it's you know, look at the view. What was it? Last I looked, 45 million people had listened to the Joe Rogan Donald Trump interview.
Yeah. Yeah,
another 15 to 20 million with J.D. Vance. Long 3-hour interviews where they riffed on any topic.
Non-edited. No edited.
Unedited, that's right. And contrast that with, you know, you take something like the CBS, where in the trailer they give one answer from Harris, which is a word salad answer, and then the actual interview, they switch that to another one. How much damage did that do to the MSM in general? People, as I said, people just got contemptuous of that. The drop in trust of the media, mainstream media, has been calamitous. I don't know what they're going to do to repair it. Look at the meltdown of the Washington Post when Bezos said we are not going to endorse. He didn't say we are going to endorse Trump. He just said we're not going to endorse anyone.
Well, he was trying to get it. He was trying to get in time ahead of something, wasn't he?
Yep, he was. But the idea that 200,000 people cancel their subscriptions on that. Do you see the vote, by the way, in D.C.?
No, I haven't, no.
90.6% for Harris.
Well, that's that bubble.
I mean, I thought Canberra was bad in terms of bubble. But this is utterly ridiculous.
That's getting close to 100%.
And then you look at the other thing they make, huge mistake. They kept trying to frighten the people into voting anti-Trump.
Yeah.
All this thing, what, fascist, Nazi, Hitler, blah, blah, blah. Trouble is, people, you know, the closing argument that Trump made, are you better off today? He didn't say it, but a lot of people also have vivid memories of what his actual 4 years were compared to the Democrats' 4 years. And it's not that difficult to lay out the charge. The Democrats were far more authoritarian in practice, in actual governing, than Trump ever was, culminating in this crazy lawfare against Trump.
Which is being dropped now.
yeah.
being dropped.
It will, of course it will be dropped. But they just turned him into an icon and a martyr rather than convicted felon.
It's kind of dumb, isn't it? It's
and it was dumb at the start. A lot of people said, you're making a mistake. And they thought, as long as they ensure Trump is the Republican candidate, they're home and dry. Well, no. People still look to, well, what's your policies? And the big issues on which people voted were class-based, jobs, security. Majority of immigrants don't support open borders. They don't support letting in unchecked criminals and seeding them in communities. They could see the damage this was doing to the job prospects, to the social welfare programs, the attempts at trying to suppress voter integrity efforts so you can check people's credentials as citizens to vote, all that. In the end, I think it just added up to a toxic cocktail that people rebelled against.
Putting your global cap on now, Ramesh, what does... I see, you know, Gallant and Netanyahu have parted ways. There have been reports just in the last few hours before our chat here, you know, that there have been pretty heavy demonstrations coming out of Israel following that, though we've heard of that before. There's Ukraine. Zelensky's been looking more and more freaked out and scared, and Trump says, I can solve this in a day, and so it goes on. So what are the ripple effects, do you think?
Again, see, in 2016, one of Hillary Clinton's more effective ads was, it's 3 a.m. in the morning and your red phone rings. Who do you want to answer it? At that time, a lot of people, including J.D. Vance, bought into that narrative that we cannot afford to have Trump's finger on the nuclear button. But then you have the actual 4 years and a very effective line. Trump was the first president in many a long year who did not start a single new war. And his argument always was, they take my threats seriously, whether it's explicit or implicit. They wouldn't dare to test me out because they know that I would react instantly. And the Russia collusion hoax had collapsed completely. He tried a rapprochement with North Korea, but without actually conceding anything. He stood up to China, which is much more conventional wisdom now than 8 years ago in 2016. His statements on Mexico in the last week brought together his two themes of controlling immigration, controlling the mass influx of criminals and drug runners into the country, and raising tariffs against unfair trade. He combined those two in that final warning to Mexico. So I think the adversaries, the period in which you watch for what they're going to do is not after he's inaugurated. It's going to be in the transition phase. This is their one window. Will Iran, for example, decide that's our best chance to break out on the nuclear front? Putin doesn't have that military edge to be able to launch that big push in the meantime. But he gambled, obviously, that we can wait it out and Trump will be retrenched from Ukraine. I think this is also a triumph of the anti-interventionist mood in American heartland. We don't want to engage in endless wars where our, you know, again, back to combining this with the mainstream media, the way they lied about what he had said with respect to Liz Cheney in recent days, when it was clear, if you listen to him, what he was saying was, these are the people who sit comfortably behind their desks and off in their offices in Washington and send our children off to fight wars. Maybe if they had to face some gunfire, they might come to a different decision. And they took that to mean he's calling for a firing squad. They just destroyed whatever credibility they had with the extreme statements.
Because that's
that sentiment
a perfect,
of peaceful.
It's a perfectly reasonable thing to say, point to make. Perfectly reasonable.
And many people have said it for a very long time.
Yeah, that's right. But it was hidden at that time.
So I think what they're going to do is push Europe, if you're concerned about your security and defense, look after it yourself. I think both Trump and Vance have made it clear that they will defend Israel. And both Vance and Trump have said their priority will be China. So those things, I think, are going to be there. Again, will China decide that rather than wait another 4 years, and good chance that Vance will then be president? It's a transition phase in which we need to do, if we have to do something with regard to Taiwan.
Yeah.
It's a possibility. It's unlikely, but it's possible. I think the pressure on Netanyahu will diminish from Americans. I think the pressure on international institutions, the WHO, the International Criminal Court, the World Court, and possibly even the United Nations more generally, is going to increase. Will Trump pull out of WHO or defund some others? Probably. I think they will retrench dramatically from the climate change agenda. And, you know, Trump, when he was praising Bobby Kennedy for his
I heard that comment.
The one thing he needs to forget is this word with three letters, oil.
Yeah, you talk about anything else, but leave the oil alone.
Exactly.
He said. Yeah.
So, you know, he remains a great entertainer, Trump.
Well, that's another component of the appeal. The more entertaining it can be, the more engaging it is. He knows that from
Well, they're all saying, if you're apologizing, you're losing. If you're explaining, you're losing. If you're entertaining, you're winning.
What do you do if you're Keir Starmer right now?
Find the nearest hole and hide.
Because it strikes me that out of all the characters here, he could be in one of the most awkward positions right now.
He already is, even domestically. And now this adds to it. It really underlines his flawed judgment in having made David Lammy foreign secretary in the first place. I mean, I don't know on what basis he made that decision, but maybe it was back to the diversity pick.
Well, DEI, I was just thinking that, even though I didn't want to say it, but other than that, it doesn't, said it.
Well, other than that, it doesn't make sense to me. There's nothing in his background to commend him to that role. Maybe he's suited to other things.
But he's also been a promoter, hasn't he, of warfare with Russia, you know, and over Ukraine. And if Ukraine's going to turn around...
And harsh on Israel.
Say again?
And harsh on Israel.
Yeah, so what do you... Do you pick up the phone and say, hey, Donald, it's Keir here. You know, all the things I said. You know how it is being a... You know, don't take it too seriously. I just wonder how you handle that.
If Keir Starmer has any sense, which there's not much evidence of so far, he will actually reach out to Nigel Farage.
Oh, a news that channel.
And say, look, we need to repair our relationship. What do we need to do? I'm prepared to apologize publicly if I have to, if it helps us restore the relationship. Otherwise, it's not, you know, there's no point in my doing it. They need to identify a good ambassador to do this. I would not rule out finding a previous Tory cabinet minister with whom Trump is comfortable and appointing him or her, as the case may be. So, you know, obviously, preferably they would look for one of their own Labour people, but certainly I would not rule out an ex-Tory minister who is known to have good relations with Trump. I don't know who that would be at that. Don't follow British politics closely enough for that.
No, I know.
That has to be foreign policy. That has to be the single highest priority for Keir Starmer. He just cannot afford to leave Lammy in place, I don't think.
Okay, so watch that space. I want to circle back to a few things before time's up. First up, and we know what's happening in Australia with the bill that's going through Parliament at the moment. It's been fierce debate. It's good to see. People are standing up against that. There's Candace Owens. There's a whole lot of issues. There's the online safety thing. Do you think a Trump win gives permission now for people to be more vocal in their objections to these things and to it to be listened to, because politicians can see an example of which way the wind is now starting to blow, given Trump has won. Do you think
is that a reason, and it's an important reason, that would be strengthened if the conservative side of politics learned that lesson as well? And they also learned to stand up and articulate and fight for what they believe in, rather than giving the impression that they're deeply embarrassed and ashamed about it all, and concede the philosophical and intellectual ground to those who attack. I think the gender agenda, the trans agenda in particular.
Yeah, I was including that too.
The importance of, you have Harris claiming to be a strong feminist and attacking Trump for his treatment of women. But there's Trump who's saying, I'm going to protect women in sports, in the privacy of their washroom, et cetera, change rooms, and so on. And that issue affects a lot more women than something else, like pronouns. We don't want pronoun police. And in the last week, if you remember, you had some of the athletes, young women athletes, come and endorse Trump on that basis. Yeah. So that is something that has mass appeal, and people can, you don't even have to be a woman as a parent.
You want your young daughter
to share.
Yeah. No way.
It cuts through very powerfully. So those things are there. And I think it reinforces the point about you don't confuse the elites in the metropolitan neighborhoods with what the whole country is thinking.
But just an example with Washington.
Just as importantly, if you're going to go after the alternative and social media giants, a lot of them are located in the US. And any American business that is targeted is going to run up against a fierce response from Trump.
Look what happened with Elon and X there. I mean, Trump will be totally aware of that.
Mm-hmm. And so will Elon.
Elon would have told him, probably.
Yeah, and he's going to use his X platform. I mean, look at Elon has been fighting Keir Starmer publicly.
Mm. Yeah.
And Starmer made the mistake of trying to respond once or twice. He hit back. Same thing happened with our e-safety commissioner and others. Yeah. Elon is like Trump in that he doesn't hold back. And he's the most successful entrepreneur. How Starmer would not invite him to his investment summit.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was going to say, it seems that Elon, but it took him a while. Like, he was sort of pushed towards it rather than starting out that way.
Well, Elon, Joe Rogan, a lot of others started off as Democrat-leaning.
Yeah.
And they ended up with Republicans. Whom did Harris get as an ex-Republican supporter? Liz Cheney.
Yeah, oh dear.
Please, is there anyone more discredited in terms of the past? And who does Trump get to support him? Tulsi Gabbard, another important, very articulate person who comes on to support him. And there's some others like that as well. So
RFK, yeah.
RFK, you don't get more royalty in the Democratic Party than him. And these are people who are able to articulate and have a long legacy of actual accomplishment in their fields, as opposed to just being celebrities, airheads rather than talking heads even.
Yeah, big difference, huge difference.
Exactly. So I think all those things, the idea that you can fool people all the time. And one more thing, by the way, on all this, that politicians should take note that they're not quite as clever as they tend to believe themselves.
Good point. I'm glad you said that.
And that is the tendency to hugely increased early voting. Too many political leaders leave it, are just, what should I say? They're all narcissists. It comes with the territory. But they believe they are political geniuses who can take the country with them in the final month and final week of the campaign and get them to vote for them. Well, if half your votes are already cast before you begin the campaign.
Yeah, not a good idea.
It's not a good idea. And that is good for democracy. The fact that people are going to be judging the entire record and not being seduced by everything that is being said in the final months and weeks and days. That should cause them to be a lot more alert and sensitive to what people are saying and thinking throughout the period. And you know, Albanese has, what, 9 or 11 media spin advisors? I think he should give at least 2 of them full-time job of just reading the comments and listening to talkback shows to gauge what people are saying throughout the term rather than in the final campaign phase.
I want to finish up on this, and we touched on it earlier, and that is the now where the media finds itself. And if, you know, Joe Rogan and a few others between them can, you know, generate views that are like so much more than all the networks, cable networks put together. And, you know, Jeff Bezos coming out and said, saying a bit of a halfway house comment, but saying what he said only a week or so ago, all that.
Prefacing that by reminding them how much readership they were losing.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It is. We know that the business model, all that's been crumbling for a while, but this could be a hammer blow as well.
It could, but for the opposite reason from what they've been believing so far. What it shows is that there is a lot of hunger still for serious, long-form analysis in depth, open conversation. People want to hear the candidates directly. They don't want the filter of analysts and spinmeisters in the media, especially, who've lost complete trust. Don't edit it. Let us know. The fact that CBS refused to release the transcript of that notorious interview did them a lot of damage, as well as the original change. And this thing of, you know, say what you have to say in 500 words or 750 words. I think they need to go back, combine that with longer reflective pieces, whether it's once a week or in the form of a magazine. But there clearly is space, or podcasts, obviously. A lot more people are listening through podcasts. But there is scope and a hunger for long-form analysis. Take the conversation wherever it goes. Ask your questions. Ask the tough questions. But there's no need to abandon your objectivity, no need to abandon your civility. You can't ask, what was his name? Larry, who used to host the CNN show.
Larry King.
He was very good because he drew people out.
Well, he asked very simple questions, Ramesh. I used to be fascinated. You brought up Larry King. I used to be fascinated with his style. And I watched many interviews of his because I thought I might be able to learn a few things that I have. And that is, ask simple questions that seek simple answers. Okay, some of the issues are complex.
Yep.
And a simple question, well put, doesn't leave much wiggle room for the person who has to answer it.
And stay with it. And if that's after the third time you ask the same question, the person still hasn't answered, move on, but trust your audience to be able to come to that very clear judgment that that person is evading the question.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Last question.
And diversity of viewpoint.
Yeah.
Media need to get back to that instead of just existing in echo chambers, listening to one another, and condemning people as evil, as opposed to
Yet they're trained to be objective and to cover all sides. Well, maybe they're not trained that way anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah, been a while since
they're indoctrinated, and they're trained to indoctrinate their readers.
And then they're told that they're actually there to save the world so that they could justify it to themselves. One final question.
Sure.
Might be too early for this, Ramesh, but given your vast experience, what will history say about this election, do you think?
I know it's. Bearing in mind history is written by winners.
Yeah, okay. Well,
history will say that this was the inflection point in reversing the damage that is being done across the West by self-loathing elites, cultural elites.
Oh, yeah.
How's that?
Pretty good. We've got it on tape.
Okay.
Maybe one day we'll bring it out and say, oh, what was he? He might have been right. Let's have a listen. Ramesh, it's great to catch up with you again. Thank you for your perspective on this. And the next 2 months is going to, well, everything's kind of exciting in a way, isn't it? It's going to be really interesting, exciting. And then we'll see if he can on that first day end that war and all those other things. Proofs in the pudding.
Meantime, a person of Indian ancestry continues to inhabit the vice presidential mansion.
Yes. Where's the president, though? What's he inhabiting? What space is he inhabiting? That's my worry.
Well,
no man's land.
Go back to his victory speech last night. It's unlike a lot of Trump things. It's actually quite short and succinct. But that one or two sentences where he points to the breadth of support for him, that's actually a very powerful off-the-cuff repudiation of all charges of misogyny, racism, and all that. It was a remarkably broad-ranging, inclusive speech where he acknowledges the support and he says it's beautiful that there's unions and non-union members, there's Arab Americans, there's blacks, there's whites, there's men and women, there's Asian Americans. They're all uniting so that we can take this movement forward. So I think in that sense, if you like, his first term will, in history, likely turn out to have been a rehearsal for the agenda in the second term. And in picking J.D. Vance, he has made sure that the movement and the agenda will continue in the hands of someone who's highly intelligent, highly competent, but also tough, comes from a tough background, and doesn't take rubbish. I mean, if you want to see how to handle aggressive and hostile and unfair media, J.D. Vance is a much better example than Trump. And he's reminiscent of Pierre Poilievre in Canada, who does the same thing, smiles, but just destroys idiotic, unthinking, hostile journalists.
In an unrehearsed way, too, right off the cuff.
Off the cuff.
All right. Emeritus Professor at the Crawford School of Public Policy, Australian National University, Ramesh Thakur. Thanks for coming on again, Ramesh. Appreciate that.
Pleasure, and have a good rest of the day.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.